We are LA Tech Weekly Podcast, hosted by Tech Zulu's Esprit Zamora. Rated number 2 across all of iTunes, new and noteworthy. The first podcast focused exclusively on LA Tech. Getting to know the startups fueling this city to become a top destination for tech and innovation. Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome your host, Esprit Zamora.
Okay, we're back.
I actually went to the first annual podcast expo. I want to say it was like 10 years ago. I listened to This Week in Tech and some of the other podcasts.
Did you see I started the LA Podcasters Meetup?
Oh yeah, I did see. I was surprised there isn't an LA Podcasters Meetup.
Last week we discussed how to find the best attorney for your LA startup. The topic today is how to hire a developer in LA if you are non-technical. Get ready for a deep dive into the world of code. Connect with us at wearelatech.com/podcast and tweet Esprit at Esprit Devora. This episode is supported by Betalist.com, where you can discover tomorrow's startups today.
This is episode number 2 of the We Are LA Tech podcast. So we're going to focus on being a non-technical person and the best ways to hire a developer, how to inspire a team, how to maybe become a developer yourself because there's such a high demand in the LA area for developers right now to become a developer that is worthy of being hired and getting paid an awesome salary. I'm here with my friend Ira sitting in Santa Monica.
Hi. Well, I don't know what I'm supposed to say there. You said Ira. And you said Santa Monica, so I should say Optrix. That's the only thing left. You're introducing me.
Who is this dashing young gentleman I am sitting next to right now?
So I am Ira Herman. I am the CTO of a company called Optrix. We just got acquired by Bodyglove/Fellows. And I also teach web development classes on the side. I've been teaching since the first boot camps when General Assembly first came to LA. I taught that first boot camp and then 3 more after that and developed a bunch of the curriculum, and now I am teaching over at School of Devs in Orange County as my side project. I'm highly, highly technical, but I also am really into business and entrepreneurship and the lean methodology. So Optrix, we make an ultra rugged waterproof case for the iPhone, and we also make really high quality glass lenses. We've really focused a lot on iPhone photography, but you can use our case and then use your phone in place of a GoPro, or like in addition to a GoPro. You can go surfing with it. You can go scuba diving even. It's waterproof up to 30 feet deep. So yeah, that's what we make.
And what attracted you to work with them? I mean, you're one of the best developers. Everybody's trying to poach you. So why do you stay?
So my most important things are working with good people that I enjoy working with and working on a product that I can get behind, that I don't have to like hard sell and convince people of why my product is good. And I've worked on stuff like that in the past where it's like, you really got to try to be hard salesy and like, oh, you should buy this because it's great. And people are like, and they take a lot of convincing versus the Optrix case where people are already buying things like GoPros and, taking pictures on their phone and stuff. And then they see it and they go, oh, this is cool. Or I have people stop me. I have a bike mount for my Optrix. And so I ride around Santa Monica all the time on my bike with my iPhone mounted in my case. And I actually had a guy stop me less than a week ago. And I thought someone was bribing him. He's like, hey, that's a really cool case. Like, where do I get one of those? And I told him about it. And then he's like, oh, thanks. And I was like, yeah, Optrix.com, OPTRIX.com. And he's like, writing it down. And he's like, oh, thanks, man. I'm looking around like, is there a hidden camera? Did someone put him up to that? But it's good having a product that's useful that, like, people actually want. I don't want to code in a bubble where people don't use my stuff. I want to make stuff that people use that's almost really transparent. They don't realize the effort that went into making it, but they're getting use out of it. And it's really amazing working just like with really good people that, we have a common vision. I've known them for a long time and they're just really positive and really like big thinkers all pitching in and making it really successful. We're like seeing synergy of like working together.
That's awesome,
and
man.
Making amazing things happen.
Totally. That's awesome. I've been really lucky. My first business partner is now, if I remember correctly, the VP of technology at Box.net. He's been that for years. He was friends with Aaron in college. And my second business partner is amazing. He's one of my best friends. These are two. He does internet security or something. Pretty much. So years ago, my site was hacked. And I freaked out. I hired all these people. Nobody could fix it. I sent an email to my best girlfriends and I said, please help me. I don't want to quit my company, but I don't know how to get anything to work. And one of my girlfriend's husbands was this internet security guy, and 24 hours, bam, it's fixed. I'm like, what? He was amazing. So we started working together naturally after that, and eventually he became my business partner. But I've been really blessed to have technical people in my life that I trust, that I could just say, hey, can you look at this? Or they're either working with me at the time. So most people don't have that. And these are the people listening right now that I really want to be there for. Like, I want you and I to be sitting here so that they can be protected. So mm-hmm. you can be protected, not you. You, I'm looking at the mic, but I see you in there, and I see your ear next to your earbud listening to this thing. And I want to, like, I want to be there for them.
I've been asked several times, actually, to teach a class on, like, programming for entrepreneurs. And I actually am friends with a bunch of like, CEOs of LA area startups who have found it challenging to communicate with their tech people and to really tell them, like, what they want them to build and what their vision is, and really understand what they were coming back with to be on the same page. And so they have taken classes or done, like, Code Academy stuff or, like, Treehouse courses and stuff like that to learn a little bit about programming so that they have kind of a baseline of right. knowledge. But that seems to be a big challenge, is just, you know, really understanding the processes.
I love code. I was going to Ruby on Rails meetup groups forever. I am not a programmer. I can build websites. That does not mean I'm a programmer. Like, I just know how to make my way around WordPress because I built MySpace pages. And, like, you know what right. I mean? And so I was like, oh, maybe I should go through a coding course. But then I asked myself, because I've always had CTO business partners. So I asked myself, do I want to maintain the knowledge of a developer for years and years and years? And that's what helped me make the decision. No, I'm not going to learn how to code, because it's not something I want to keep up, because code is constantly changing. You won't become a full-fledged programmer by taking one course, would you?
If you take an immersive course, then yes, you will.
And what's that mean exactly? It means, like, a lot of information in 4 weeks or something.
Yeah, that's like, you know, there are a couple major types of courses. There's, like, the kind of the one-off introductory sessions, weekend workshop kind of things. There are those. You're not going to become a coder from that. There's night classes or weekend classes where you get together maybe 8 hours a week, and you're going to learn enough to be dangerous, but you're not going to usually be a full coder from that either. But then there's the boot camps, which are like the full-on immersive 10 to 12 weeks. And all you do is learn to code all day, every day, Monday through Friday for 10 to 12 weeks. And those, you will come out as a coder.
So would you hire one of those people to be one of your developers on your team?
Yes, I would.
Really?
Yeah. And actually, I have. Like, we have worked with people who've graduated the program.
A lot of people talk about that there's not a lot of developers in LA. Why do you think that is?
It's because there's not a lot of developers anywhere in the country, at least. There's a huge shortage of talent.
Right? Or no?
Even there, there's a shortage. That's why the boot camps, the developer boot camps, started happening there to fuel the demand with some supply. It's just kind of a thing. It's there's a shortage of talent when it comes to programming and designing. So that's why we're seeing programs kind of turning out people to fill those roles.
It's really interesting. Maybe this is the right time to take one of those courses and really market yourself as a developer, because there's such high demand.
True. Yeah.
But is there enough people to even afford hiring developers? Because maybe there's a high demand, but there's also a ton of people that just want it for free.
There are, like, at least now. I mean, we're really living in a great economy, kind of a bubble in this area yeah. where we're seeing a really high success rate of people graduating our programs, where, you know, the last one was like over 92% had jobs within like 2 months after completing the program and are making decent money too.
Right.
So there's not just people who, you know, don't have money. There are people, you know, companies at various stages, and there are kind of bigger companies. We've got, like, in Orange County, Mavenlink is looking to hire 8 developers right now. We've got, like, Red Digital down there. SendGrid. There's like a bunch of big companies that are always looking for more dev talent. And then here in LA too, we've got like card.com, and we've got
Yellow Pages
or YP.com. Yeah. And we've got all these companies that they have funding, they have some development team, they're looking to scale or they're looking to add more. So although card.com has probably added more now, YP seems to be pretty regularly looking, and they sponsor a lot of the Ruby
meetups.
Where's
the best place to find a job as a developer?
I think the demo days are really good at General Assembly or at School of Devs or at co-working spaces. Depending on the job, like if you're looking for a job, that's one thing. If you're looking to freelance or consult, then that's more of meetups and kind of going to events and stuff like that. Uncubed is a good one too, where companies are looking for developers, and I've seen like SpaceX and, you know, pretty cool
Uncubed
companies there.
Uncubed is really cool. It's on the beach right before Pacific Palisades.
You know, kind of an interesting one is AngelList has just a really great directory of companies in the area and what jobs they're hiring for. So that's where I send all of my students, is like, go to AngelList, see what's out there, you know, what kind of positions and if they want to specialize or not, front-end web developer, back-end web developer, you know, junior web developer, what kind of titles are out there and what's out there, what kind of qualifications they're looking for, where the places are located, even salaries are there. So, you know, as if you're looking to hire a developer too, you could go to AngelList and see what other people are willing to pay developers and get an idea. Yeah, so it's good all around to check out AngelList and their job listings. You can really filter down by location and keywords and titles.
Cool.
The traditional startup model is having a hacker and a hustler. And so like the hustler's like the CEO and kind of running the show, technical enough to be dangerous, but not really a full-on software developer usually. And then the hacker is the CTO of the company, developing the minimum viable product, doing all the coding and kind of technical setting up the web stuff and all of that.
So a hacker isn't necessarily someone that's going to steal your credit card number.
Not anymore. I guess that we took it back. Like originally it came from the term hacking away on a keyboard. So then the dark hackers kind of took it. I don't know. So yeah, that's at least around here in the LA tech scene, a hacker is someone who can program.
Cool. How can you tell if their code is good or if they, because every student has a different, you know, competency, right? Like how can you vet them out if you're not a developer? What do you do?
That's
I go to my
really
CTO business partners and I'm like, you guys do it.
Yeah, that's a really good question. And really, if you're not a developer, you can't. But then there's a question too of like, what really is good code?
Wait a second. If you're not a developer, you can't.
Yeah. Like,
and now they are turning off the podcast.
No.
You know?
Well, so no, if you know nothing about code, like there's no way you can look at it and tell, is this good code or not?
Right.
And there are so many different possible combinations of code that you could write that it's difficult to just put it through some kind of automated checker or something like that and see if it's good code.
Right.
So as a business person, I also tend to like rein developers in when they get too in their head about coding perfectly.
Right.
Because there's, you get to a point where there are best practices, but there's no like right way or perfect way to do it. So you have to ask like, what makes it good?
Mm-hmm.
And what makes code good? What makes it written well is, are you shipping? Are you delivering the feature within a short enough period of time? And does it work? And is it fast enough that whatever your app is can function? And so pretty much if that's the case, then good. Obviously, if you work with a developer and they're taking a really long time and they're trying to be a perfectionist about it and you're not actually shipping, so here you are as an entrepreneur.
Oh, what's shipping mean? Remember, we're non-technical.
Okay, shipping.
We're
is
non-technical
actually,
over here
actually
right now.
Actually pushing the code to production, like pushing it out where people can use it. Making a finished app that people can use. Yeah.
Okay,
so not so taking that feature that they're coding or the app they're working on and making it available to other people, to end users to use. So it's critically important. And it is one of those things too, that there's kind of an efficiency cutoff of how much time you spend making your code perfect, which it's never going to be perfect, versus making it like really sloppy and buggy and then you can't rely on it. So kind of anywhere in the midpoint is actually okay, especially from a business perspective. And you can kind of evaluate that as a non-programmer. You can look at it and say, you know, does this code work? Do a few few tests, try to break it.
How do you do tests? How do you break it? Remember, we're not developers right now.
Okay. Good question. So if, if you went to like facebook.com and you tried to sign in, but like mess up your password or mess up your username, or, you know, try it from a different browser, like try it from Safari, try it from Firefox, try it from Chrome, try it from an Android phone, try it from an iPhone, try it from these different kind of scenarios, and then see once you get past those things, like logging in, you know, maybe you wanted to see if you posted something and then delete it, does it actually delete the post? So does, you know, if you delete it, does it really delete, or does it show up in other people's feeds? So you might want to make a couple test accounts, make them friends, unfriend, go through just the basic functions and make sure that things work, because you'd be surprised, like a bunch of things could not work. You know, I've had experiences where I've worked with developers that have produced really shoddy kind of work like that. And I know a bunch of people who've had that experience too. And it's really frustrating. And that's the point where, you know, you can throw together and kind of do a hack job.
There are actually different types of developers. Really? Developer that does stuff really fast, which is probably like a hack job. There's a developer that really takes his time to document all the code. What that means is writing notes of what the code means. I think that's the best kind of developer you could have, because that what that means is when another developer has to look at that code, they can make sense of it. It's like cliff notes on a book or something.
And there are ways to write code too that make it more intuitive to read, even as an experienced developer. There are certain ways to write things, and it depends on your goal. Certain things to write things that you may be able to do a ton of really crazy stuff in one line. And a lot of developers will do that just because their goal is to write it in one line. Yeah. It's very difficult to wrap your head around if you're going back to try to maintain the code, or if you're another developer picking up an existing code base and taking over or contributing a feature. You know, a lot of what I do is based on choosing to write the code in a way that it's very readable and understandable. And then when there's any question about it, putting a comment in that is just English language, it doesn't get processed as part of the app or the code that anyone can read.
It means it doesn't serve a function on the site. It's just like writing a note, a comment.
It's just a note, yeah. Or it's like documentation or a note inside the code, but it doesn't do anything. It doesn't actually run in the app. It's just for you to go back and look at.
Right.
So, and that's not only, like, I actually don't even really do the comments for non-technical people. I do it for myself and for other programmers. Right. Because even knowing how to code, you know, if I wrote something 6 months ago,
right,
I don't remember anything about it. I go back to add a feature or change how my code works.
Yeah.
I have to read that back in, and I have to understand what I was thinking and what I was doing. So it's made it a lot easier to do that.
So are you ready to be proud of me?
Yeah.
I actually document my WordPress code. The reason why I do this, same reason, but also so that if I break it, I know what I did to break my site every time.
That's really good. Yeah.
Yeah. I learned from my old business, but that was not me. I learned how to do that. I was like, and I get so excited. I'm like, documenting code, you have to, what is it? You do the open bracket and then the exclamation dash dash and or something like that.
Yeah. It's actually harder in HTML than like any other programming language.
So I know how HTML, to document the hardest way.
It's like a less than sign, exclamation mark, hyphen, and then your code.
Every single time I bug my old business, I'm like, what was that again that I used to document? And he's like, oh man, rolling his eyes over the phone.
In Ruby, you just put a pound sign in front of it.
Get
or in JavaScript, you just do two forward slashes.
Okay, so this is so inspiration, like
every other language, it's actually easier to comment than HTML. But that's the thing too, is a lot of people know how to do what you do and go like, but I'm not a programmer. But you actually kind of are.
You guys! I might be a programmer.
Because you're able to look at code and make sense of it. And there is a dividing line of whether the code renders, you know, elements on a page. So like HTML.
Wait, what's that mean? Renders elements on a page. He's going to kill me, you guys.
You can sign up. I might. It's a fancy way of saying that if you go to it in a web browser, then the code puts like an object there, like a button or a paragraph or a picture. Okay. Or a link or something.
That's good to know. I know one of my girlfriends has a company. She's gone through three different developers because she doesn't know how to see the code. Each guy says the last guy was terrible. She's still not a programmer, nor will she ever be. It's kind of like me. I'll never truly be a programmer. So like, I can't read, you know, Ruby and tell you if it's good or bad. I'm not a programmer, you know? So what can we do?
You could be if you spent the time on it.
If I took an immersive course. Yeah. So
So that's not the only way. That's just the fastest way, in my opinion. So you can learn, like, the old-fashioned way, like I learned, like a bunch of other people I know learn, where it took us years to learn how to code. But it's a fast track. If you want to learn it in 3 months, you can take an immersive course and fast track it.
But come on, dude, let's be serious. I have an idea. I want to launch my company. Now, in my case, I know how to work my way around WordPress. So WordPress is a great MVP, minimum viable product to launch something.
I love WordPress.
Right.
And I've made a bunch of MVPs in it.
I think Wix, W-I-X, great site for an MVP. What do you think?
True. Yeah, a lot of people love Wix lets you just build a website using their system. So it's like a web builder.
And it's beautiful.
That's, yeah, pretty easy
my
to use.
My girlfriend, Samara-Bay.com. You could check out what she built on Wix. Wow. I think it's one of the best sites I've ever seen, actually. Another great one, is it Squarespace?
Sounds right. That's one of the challenges, too, is there's, like, so many different technologies, even for, like, visual web builder kind of things.
I thought you were going to say there's so many different tech companies with Square in the, in the name.
That's just a known fact.
So, yeah, I think it's Squarespace. I'll include it in the links. Yeah. Right? Okay. So it's great. I'm lucky that I know WordPress. If you guys don't know WordPress, I actually would highly recommend learning how to work a way around WordPress, because then it's, like, a fast way to get to at least step one, right? Let's say we want to build, like, a super fancy application or something that takes a lot of stuff going on. I can't do that in WordPress. The first thing I'd say is, okay, I need to hire a developer. And this is where the problem hits. Where do I hire the developer? How much do I need to budget for the developer? Let's say I don't have any budget. Then what do I do? How do I find a developer free? If I do have a budget for a developer, who do I hire? How much do I spend? Do I get to the top of the line? And then once I hire that developer, how do I know if they're the right developer for me? Most people are on a budget. And they don't have the money to hire a developer. And I love you guys. Like, you guys aren't a number to me. You guys are, you take your time and you're excited and I care about you. And I want to show that. I care about this conversation right now that you're able to listen to this podcast and be like, whoa, they just saved me $10,000 or $100,000 of mistakes in development. Like, that's important to me. So, you know, I always suggest junior developers at General Assembly. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I think the developers coming out of General Assembly are amazing. And they've, like, I've actually learned so much from them. And
really?
Yeah.
That surprises me.
Because it's the type of person who goes through, at least in, you know, in this area, LA and Orange County, I'm seeing the same thing. The type of people that are just going through an immersive program like that in the first place, their level of commitment is through the roof, because they're not cheap, for one thing. You know, it costs like $10,000 to $12,000 to take one of those courses. And then you have to take 3 months off from your life, basically. So you have to have money saved up, like, in order to do that, because you're not working a full-time job during one of these programs. Most people quit their jobs to do one of these classes. And then, they're just trying to get the most value out of the course as possible. And so they end up picking things up really quickly. And we get a lot of people too, who are like, they were lawyers, or they were, we've had like Harvard graduates, people from the film industry, like all kinds of people who are very smart people who have even been highly educated in other areas, who decide they want to learn to code. And so that's just like the quality of the people. I'm a big fan of whiteboards. So, you know, you whiteboard out what the screens are actually going to look like and where people are going to click.
Totally.
And what the app is supposed to do.
Yeah.
And so it's like the 7 habits of highly effective people. Like, begin with the end in mind. A lot of really technical people have lost sight of that and they're just ready to jump in and start coding. It's really good for developers to know what the end result's going to be and to kind of, you know, kind of reins us in. But it's also good for non-technical people, because then it's a picture is worth 1,000 words. So it communicates what's going to happen. They can have real input in it.
Right.
And there's even things that I've changed in my process. Like, I used to make really high res mockups.
Right.
So mockups, you know, using a computer program that look like a finished app. And it turns out I stopped doing that. Now I use whiteboards and pencils and paper, or pens and paper. What I feel was, you know, almost the complete reverse, like almost a step backwards away from technology to doing it the old fashioned way of drawing things out and writing things down. What's called a low fidelity mockup or a low fidelity wireframe, or you'll even find wireframing programs that make it look like like it's hand drawn. So that's like Balsamiq is one of those.
And by the way, if you do for some reason want to go digital, Balsamiq that Ira mentioned is great. And the other one that I've used before is InVision.
Or I'll even draw them on my iPad. I have a stylus and I'll use Penultimate.
Wait, is that an app? I don't have an iPad.
Yeah, it's just like a note-taking app from Evernote. It's free, and you can just draw. And so I'll use Penultimate and make a notebook on the iPad and just draw out my wireframes.
Super cool. One tip my old business partner gave me. He's like, if someone ever says there's a perfect code, like, oh, you should always build in whatever, Ruby.
Whatever language.
Yeah. That is wrong because the code that you should build a project with is always based on the project. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, I would agree with that. I always feel like right tool for the right job.
Right, totally.
Tool for the job. So that's why I use WordPress a lot, actually.
I want to thank Betalist, a huge supporter of the We Are LA Tech podcast. You've heard of Betalist, right?
Yeah, I heard of it on your podcast, actually, and yeah. I tried it out.
So what'd you think?
It was really cool because, you know, like I said, one of the hardest parts as a developer is actually connecting with customers or getting people to use your product and getting that feedback loop. So it seemed like a cool idea.
So how does Betalist connect with
Well, it seems like they've got a list of people who want to use new tech products and apps and services. That's really a cool market segment because that's the early adopters. And so as a software developer and as a lean business person, I really want to go after those early adopters and connect with them because they're going to want to use something that's kind of cool and new, that's not complete, that's potentially buggy, and they're going to be okay with it because that's what they signed up for is a beta.
Totally.
So it seems cool. Like, so the next time I go off on a whim with one of my side projects, I think I'll post it on Betalist and see who uses it.
Rad. Yeah, I as you guys know, I'm in love with Betalist and I'm so thankful for their support of the We Are LA Tech podcast. Do you know Will I Am says that learning how to code is a must in this day and age?
I know he's really big into it. Yeah, he's got the I Am Angel Foundation.
Oh, I didn't even know
that.
And
yeah, they worked with the city of LA to do the Hack for LA Civic Hackathon.
Tell me more. That's all I got.
I mentored it. Usually at hackathons now, it's a lot
What's
of work to do them.
Just in case.
So a hackathon is usually like a weekend or a couple of days to, they could be one day even, where people get together and usually there are programmers and graphic designers and, you know, other like UI and UX designers and people with ideas. And everyone gets together and kind of forms teams and makes an app. And then by the end of the weekend or however long the hackathon is, then they present them and there's a panel of judges. And so there's usually at least first place is picked out and awarded something. Some of them have more places.
They're just providing someone an opportunity to get that developer for free. I mean, the whole point of a hackathon is that a whole bunch of people get together for fun and build a project together and use their skill sets. And if you really want to get, you know, that developer and form that relationship where you're going to, you know, you have a vision for your company and you want a developer to see and believe in your vision, you take that vision to a hackathon and maybe that developer will stay with you past the hackathon.
Yeah, it's also a good way, no matter which side of the table you're on, if you're a developer or an entrepreneur or, you know, marketing business, graphic designer, like whatever side you're on, it's a good way to meet interesting people and have kind of a high pressure environment. It's fun, but it's, you know, you're trying to hit the deadline to make something in a weekend. So to have that experience of working with them, and I have, you know, the people I've worked with at various hackathons are still good friends of mine just because it's really kind of cool people that go to them. They're interesting. And we have this interesting kind of shared experience of working on a team together.
Totally. Some of them have gotten prizes. Like flights to places.
Yeah, there was there's a period of time where startup weekends, if you won. So Koloft does startup weekend.
Koloft is a co-working space, in case you guys are new to LA, that is on Santa Monica Boulevard, I believe.
Yeah, Santa Monica and about 10th Street.
If I remember correctly, it's one of the first co-working spaces in Santa Monica.
Yeah, it was when I first moved out here, actually, about 4 years ago. That's one of the first places I found and went to, and it's been huge because they really helped create a lot of the culture and the scene
Completely.
That's out here. So
I feel like they were the reason the culture and the scene I feel like they were the seed that planted the LA tech culture. And after Koloff, that's when all the other accelerators and co-working spaces and investors and media, I mean, it wasn't right after. They focused on community for quite a long time and people just congregated there.
Yeah, Koloff is really amazing. And then, so they do the startup weekend events. And so this was, you know, a few years ago, the startup weekends that they'd run, if you got first place, you're pretty much guaranteed to get some kind of funding.
Right.
And like have a go at it if you wanted that to be your company that you focused on. You know, 1 year Ashton Kutcher was a judge.
Zarly.
Yeah. And invested along with a bunch of other people in Zarly that was the winner. And then.
And Zarly was this mobile app that basically you could say what you want. So I want a burger right now. And then you click on your mobile app and then some random person brings you your burger.
Yeah, it was for you. Yeah,
it's
exactly.
Like whatever random thing you needed.
Yeah, you could. It was kind of the opposite of Craigslist. Craigslist, you would post what you have for sale or to offer and people could bid on it. And Zarly was the opposite of like you post what you want.
Yeah.
And then people could do it.
An LA startup that you've heard about in the last couple of weeks that you're like, whoa, that's really cool.
There's a lot of really cool ones, but I do like the guys who graduated out of the hackathons. So like Look.io won first place, got some funding, went to Amplify, which is an accelerator in the area, and then ended up getting acquired within like 1 year of doing this startup weekend, which was amazing. Yeah.
Amazing.
Those guys are
cool. Look.io.
Look.io, which is now liveperson.com acquired.
Yeah. But, oh, yeah. So, it's so crazy. And so, I've used
Yeah, Mark
person
and
for years,
Grant
yeah.
over there. Those guys are cool.
It's a way for people to accelerate their learning. I think it's a great way to be creative. And I think putting all else aside, I'm not a big fan of people who code for a weekend calling themselves entrepreneurs. But I think the concept of a hackathon is only does good.
True. And yeah, like you said too, learning. I learn tons of stuff every hackathon. Everyone learns cool stuff. It's a good kind of information exchange, knowledge sharing, and just trying to do something you haven't done before. So yeah, not just a good way to meet people and find, especially if you're an entrepreneur or trying to find developers, it is a good way to meet potential developers, but it's also a great way to work together, see how you guys work. And then if you win it, then you probably will get some kind of funding.
Yeah.
And then the team could stick together.
It's
and
true.
That's one of the biggest challenges. As a developer, I see and get asked a lot, you know, people have app ideas and they really don't understand like the amount of effort that goes into developing. It's like building a house and actually like, you know, you got to build the app kind of brick by brick and piece by piece and put a lot of effort into it. And there's only so much time in the day as a developer to pick and choose which thing you're going to work on building or which things. And so, you know, there are entrepreneurs that have some kind of money saved up or, you know, able to fund or companies that already have some kind of funding that are looking for developers. Those guys are in a better situation than some entrepreneurs go around to events and they just have an idea, but they don't have any funding. They don't really have things put together and they're looking for developers just to work for equity. And
that's frustrating.
That's basically saying, hey, I want to come work for free.
Totally. But to be fair, look, there's a lot of us that just have an idea and really genuinely want to take that idea to another level. And I always share that I think the most important thing as a non-technical entrepreneur is to understand how to share your vision and inspire your team.
True.
That's how you get someone, quote unquote, to work for free, because they're not actually working for free. Because I feel all my teammates, I've had teammates that have worked with me pre-raising money, post-raising money, like all these different levels. And they've all worked with me because I've truly cared about what their dreams are as well. And I worked every day to help them achieve their dreams. So for instance, like with my sports company, if one of my girls wanted to host a national TV show, then I work to find opportunities that she'd eventually be able to host a national TV show, which she did, or one of my guys wanted to be a famous photographer, or whatever it is. Like, everybody has a dream. Everybody has a dream. And all of our dreams are different. Some people dream of spending more time with their family. Some people dream of spending more time, you know, just with their children or their spouse, or like going to the beach or hanging out in Thailand or backpacking. You know, I went backpacking last year and some people were like, how did you do that? So everyone has a dream. Maybe their dream is to be on the cover of Fast Company. Whatever that dream may be, it's really important for all of us, especially as entrepreneurs, to really listen to people. What are your dreams in your team? And then how can you help your team achieve their dreams? This is just my take. Listen, I'm one opinion out of many.
I agree. So there's kind of that dividing line too of like, it used to be classic. Like I had friends that when I started getting more into programming, they're like, oh, I have this app idea. And like, all right, you make it. I'll give you the idea. You make it. And then let's just split the profits 50-50. Right. And there's like, it's really kind of a like ignorance is bliss. It's like an ignorant way to look at it, not realizing how much goes into not only the app development, but that's not even the hardest part, right, in my opinion. It's the marketing. Actually connecting with people and getting them to pay you money for your app. That's so valuable. So as a non-technical person, if you have that piece down and you're like, you put as much effort as you can in, you do everything you can without being able to program, you know, you build an MVP using WordPress or Wix or whatever, you get people to actually sign up, and even better, you get people to actually pay you money for your service, or you kickstart a campaign or something, like do some crowdfunding, to where you've really created this vision and you've connected with who your customers are.
Right.
That's the hard work. That's the legwork that a developer sees that and goes, oh, that's really cool. You know, that's really the hard part. We can build stuff. I do a little bit of everything, but speaking from just the development perspective.
No, but even that, maybe you're not motivated by money. You know, maybe you're fine. Like, you're cool. And you're like, that sounds great and all, but I'm not really motivated right now at this period in my life. I'm motivated by XYZ. And that's not, that was like your friend didn't take the time to say, hey, what's important to you? So I know General Assembly has these mixers where people can meet developers. Do school devs have something similar?
Yes.
Okay. So both of them, if you guys want to like check out the mixers that these two organizations have, that's how you can meet the developers. Or I'm sure if you just email coordinators at...
Yeah, I'm sure. Through the web pages.
Yeah.
You know, either schoolofdevs.com or generalassembly.com.
Yeah.
You know, you can...
Super
receptive. You can definitely connect. It's great to connect developers with potential employers.
Yeah.
And both of these programs are really big in the communities as well. So General Assembly has really been an amazing hub of the LA, you know, Santa Monica tech community.
And now they're in downtown too.
Now downtown too. And School of Devs is partnered with PeopleSpace out in Irvine. So they've been a huge hub of community in Orange County. So it makes sense that both of these entities are teaching and connecting people as part of these programs. But yeah, so it's one way. It's a good way to find people, especially since there's a shortage of developers. Because I think a lot of companies end up getting developers just by poaching them, by, you know, going to LinkedIn or hiring a recruiter. I get like emails all the time from recruiters and people trying to poach me. And they just search for people who are already in the position that they're looking for, whether they're working at another company or not, and try to make them an offer they can't refuse. So that's an option. But it's nice that there's kind of a new pool of talent coming into the ecosystem from these programs. But yeah, the hackathons are a great way too. And just meetups in general. So there are technical meetups. There's a monthly Ruby meetup, LA Ruby, and I'm sure there's a bunch of other developer ones. Or there's even like Hack Night at Carbon 5 is a good one too, where you can really get a good mix of developers and entrepreneurs. And I know a lot of connections that have been made at these meetups.
That's awesome. I'm very boggled that you drive to Orange County from Santa Monica. I can't get past that.
I'm renting a place out there too, so I'm there half of the week.
Okay. Yeah. That makes sense.
But I'm boggled that I drive that far too. I put so many miles on my car.
So I just want to give people like one more solution on how to hire a developer. That's one thing I know we've hired developer. There's also, I can't believe I haven't talked about this. There's outsourcing for developers. Like I have an amazing developer in the Ukraine.
Oh yeah. So like Odesk/Elance.
Yeah. So we found him on a Ruby chat or something. Maybe it was Stack Overflow or something like that. I don't remember. Some forum, some dev forum. Obviously, I couldn't do that myself. My business partner did, but that's how we found him. But what are some, let's dive into that. Like, what are some outsourcing ways to get, like, there's great developers in Argentina. And then if you do have the funding, how do you hire just a developer straight out?
Well, so outsourcing, you have to definitely put a lot of time and effort into, is my experience, unless you get a good recommendation from someone on who to use. So that's the challenges. I've actually worked in the past with developers, and especially, you know, I've gone back and forth between technical and business. So there are periods of time where I focused on business, and, you know, like Esprit said, or like you said, I'm talking to the audience now, talking to the radio audience.
They are there. They're listening.
So, I might, but like you said, Esprit, that there's.
You guys are real. Why don't. Just because you look like an astronaut, spaceman, yeah, Mike, sitting in front of us.
It's a very odd.
Does not mean you are not spaceship, real. Mike.
There's times where I force myself to delegate and rely on other people. Even recently, trying to bring on some outsource help. I'm a huge fan of in person, but I've had, you know, over the past like 5 years, I've had some endeavors where I've worked with some outsourced people, and I found it to be really time consuming because first you have to vet and figure out who you're going to use. So that's a challenge. And then, probably a good way to do that is to give them some kind of problems to solve, give them little like code challenges or tests and see how they complete it, or even come up with your own and do a small job, just do like a small, maybe like a 1 week or even a 1 day job.
I agree.
And see how they produce and how it is working with them. Yeah, before doing something bigger. But so first you have to vet them. But then the other thing too is some of them, especially I've worked with some people in India that this is just me personally, I have a hard time understanding their accent. And so that's a challenge doing like a Skype call and things like that, is understanding what they're saying has been a barrier for me. And then communicating too exactly what I want done, I've had to put so much effort into drawing it out and annotating it. So making notes on what should be done and kind of developing this whole plan of how to code it that I'm like, I might as well have coded it myself. So
I will say I rarely talk to them on the phone.
Oh, okay.
I've outsourced a lot. I love that. And when I use the word outsource, by the way, I should say delegate. Like I have a team in LA and New York. Like it's not just India to me, the word outsourcing. It just means delegating.
Yeah.
And typically it means delegating the things I either suck at or don't know how to do, or super timely things. Like maybe there's an administrative spreadsheet. But with developers, same thing. Like I've never spoken to them on the phone. It's all been through email.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
That makes sense. And yeah, like as far as outsourcing, delegating, consulting, even locally, there's a bunch of great shops out here, a bunch of great people.
Right.
And pretty much I and pretty much every other developer I know, we like solving problems and we like helping and building stuff. So even working in a full-time role, we'll do side projects, especially if they're small things here and there. So that's, you know, my side project right now is teaching. And then after this, I'll probably do some more project work, but just a little bit. I'm kind of a fan of local personal connection where you could get together and kind of figure stuff out and
draw
at the same table and stuff like that. But
if you guys want an introduction to my developer who's been amazing in the Ukraine, he only does Ruby though, then tweet at We Are LA Tech and I'll make an introduction for you. But yeah, it seems like overall you wouldn't suggest outsourcing development. It's like a loaded question.
It depends. So I would just say, if you're looking to get it done on a low budget, consider learning as much as you can yourself versus going to like an overseas person or team that's cheap.
Right.
Because you'll spend, in my experience, you'll spend more time trying to communicate and work with them and then get something back from them that's got typos and misspellings or doesn't work right, and go back and forth with oh, change this, and then they come back
But I totally disagree. You're telling someone non-technical to go learn how to build a Ruby on Rails site
themselves. Not Ruby on Rails. I'm talking about like WordPress and Wix.
No, but we're at the next. Past MVP now. We're ready to hire a developer. That's what I'm saying. Somehow we got the development done. I don't know. We'll just leave that to the fantasy land. But somehow development's done and we're ready to hire a developer. Or maybe we're just ready for that next step and we don't have a site yet, but we're ready to hire a developer.
Well, so if we're past MVP and we've tested and gotten validation that people are paying us money for our idea.
What? You're supposed to get paid money for a company?
Crazy talk. Then, you know, that's kind of the model that's the most popular for funding by, you know, the incubators and the angel investors in this area is the hacker and the hustler, which is if you're the business person, then, you know, sitting down every day, like getting together with someone and working with a programmer or technical person, and there's a lot of crossover and overlap on the lines.
Wait, but you're saying sitting and getting together with a programmer, who is this programmer that we're all of a sudden sitting with?
Well, if it's,
and we've been trying to get a hold of.
If it's an outside, well, no, you said we somehow got the MVP made, so maybe you know, or you went to meetups, or you went to like a school of devs or General Assembly demo day, or you went.
By the way, we have all the events that go on in LA on wearelatech.com, and there's a full comprehensive event calendar of every single LA startup related event.
All I'm saying is there's like a magic to being able to get together with one person and having that same person consistently throughout the project. Whereas if you're outsourcing, you're working usually with like a project manager that's got a team of developers in some country that you will never visit and don't know the people there and can't talk to them. And you can't sit down and chat. You can't go grab coffee. You can't draw on a piece of paper and slide it over.
Unless you want to go backpacking, which I highly encourage.
There's kind of a reason that the model's popular is, you know, even like the, you know, Facebook and all these other movies where people get together, they like rent a house and they work together. Yeah. And, you know, depending on how you do it, it's just there's that magic of like being able to get together with people, or even if you're not getting together, having a consistent person that you're working with.
Totally.
That's invested in your idea. Like they care about the mission of what you're trying to create.
See, this is what I'm saying. It goes back to, it's not about like, how do I hire a developer? I think the better question is, how do I inspire a team?
Yeah.
And then you're going to find a developer because you know how to inspire a team. A big thing is looking for character and integrity in the person that you hire. So focusing not so much on what level of a developer they are, but focusing first on who are they as a person, and then second, their supposed level of development skills. At least that's the way I would go.
Yeah, and that's the thing too, is a developer really isn't like what they show in the movies, someone who can just like sit down at a keyboard and hack away during a montage for like a whole weekend straight and come out with Facebook. It's actually a process of like trying things, like planning out, trying things out. They don't work, figuring out what's wrong with it, learning something new and solving new problem. So being a developer is really this lifelong commitment to learning and like finding answers. So you can hire a developer at pretty much any stage and know that they can grow. And a lot of the really good like consultancies will look for developers, not that know everything or that are really high level. They'll look for ones that kind of see what their process is when they can't figure something out. How do they find the answer, and could they get it to work after like trying things out?
Cool. Well, thank you so much for taking your time to do the podcast number 2, episode 2 with us.
Thanks for having me here.
Yeah. And I'm hoping we could get back together to talk about what to do if you're a developer and how to really have the best development environment and find the best company to work with or build a startup on your own and really focus on that topic.
Yeah, definitely.
Awesome. So I'm so excited that I was able to do the second We Are LA Tech podcast. If you guys want to connect, you can connect on Twitter at We Are LA Tech. Also, wearelatech.com. The podcast page, if for some reason you need it, is wearelatech.com/podcast. And it's a weekly show, and you'll be hearing from us every week. Your feedback is incredibly valuable. I want every last good or bad detail of where you'd like this to go, because We Are LA Tech podcast exists specifically for you to be a helpful resource to save you time and to save you money. So feel free to shoot that out and any feedback that you have, and I'm completely open and welcome to receive it. All right. Have a great day, guys. And I will see you again next week, or hear you again, or you'll hear me again next week. All right. Bye.
Bye.
Thank you to Tech Zulu and Digital LA for always supporting me and the community and being the best we can possibly be. And thank you to Jay Hoffman Live for creating the beat you heard at the beginning and end of this podcast.